We begin with the world-famous scientist Nancy Rabelais. She is a professor of oceanography, coastal sciences, and Shell Endowed Chair in Oceanography at LSU's College of the Coast and Environment. And she is here to talk about the dead zone. And good morning to you, Professor Rabelais.
Hi, Jim. It's been a while since we've talked, but it's never been this large before. So.
Yeah, well, what does that mean? I see these headlines, a New Jersey-sized area. What does it mean to the ecology and to the people who live near the coast, as we do?
Well, that means that there's an area the size of New Jersey, basically, that if a trawler goes offshore, shrimper, puts a net down and drags it, he will not catch anything because all of the shrimp have evacuated the area. All of the croaker, redfish, anything else that depends on the bottom are gone. So that's a very large area that is no longer suitable for fisheries.
It's almost 9,000 square miles, isn't it?
Yes, yes, almost. And it might have reached that size if we had been able to close it off on the western end, but we ran out of time and had come back to port. It's about a 24-hour cruise just to get from Texas to Cocodrie.
What causes this?
It's a combination of the physics and biology of the Gulf. The fresh water from the Mississippi River is lighter and warmer than the bottom water, which is colder and saltier, and it creates a layered system that oxygen cannot get from the surface to the bottom. And the other factor is the excess load of nitrogen in the form of nitrates that makes the small individual phytoplankton grow. And it's not all taken up by the food web and ends up on the bottom. And bacteria decompose it and use up the oxygen. So it's a great dinner table for bacteria, but it's not helping us.
Well, what are the dangers of this getting bigger and bigger?
Well, it's only going to get so large, but it can get more severe. It can cover more of the area. It can go further up into the water column, and that just means less habitat. The danger of this excess nitrogen to people who live in the Mississippi River watershed is that they have water quality problems too, high nitrate levels in drinking water and noxious and toxic algal blooms in their lakes and reservoirs. So it affects people on both ends of the watershed.
Well, these so-called dead zones, they weren't even recognized until like the 1970s, right?
That's about when the first printed record of low oxygen on the Louisiana coast occurred. Some other areas, Chesapeake Bay, it's occurred earlier, the Baltic Sea earlier, but from the 50s on is when the nitrate started going up in the river, and that's when we started measuring it. And so we don't have data that go all the way back into time, but we take sediment cores, and in those sediment cores are indicators of oxygen conditions, and those tell us that it's gotten worse over time.
Well, should this be, Professor, a cause for alarm or concern? Where should the public be as far as recognizing that this huge, huge area the size of the state of New Jersey is truly a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, it's a concern because it's a resource for Louisiana and the rest of the country with regard to seafood. And it's basically not a functioning ecosystem. It affects things like greenhouse gas fluxes and many other things. So it's not the end of the world or anything, but the fact that it keeps being so large year to year means that whatever efforts are being undertaken in the watershed, which are many, are not over a large enough scale, geographic scale and intensity to make a difference in the nitrogen flux to the Gulf of Mexico.
And this is primarily a low oxygen situation. That's what causes this.
Yes, yes. The bacteria use up the oxygen. There's no resupply from the surface waters, and so it just gets lower and lower and lower.
Well, since this is caused by human activities, what can we earthlings do to remedy this?
Well, there are a lot of things that can be done. The main aspect is agricultural practices, less fertilizer, spring applications rather than winter, buffer strips on the fields, and more people are experimenting with sustainable agriculture, things that grow all year long or that have long roots or that they leave the debris on the field, and that cuts down in both soil erosion and nitrogen flux. So it works, and it's economical. You can grow things like kernza, which is a grain. It can generate biofuels. It can be used like wheat. So, and it's better for the land and better for the nitrogen issue.
Now, a listener asks about the convergence of the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico. Is this a catalyst for the dead zone?
The fact that the Mississippi River delivers so much water onto the shelf and creates that two-layered system means that the area is prone to or susceptible to this hypoxia, but it didn't exist until it really started showing up in the 1970s when the nitrates went up. So it's natural, but it's aggravated by excess nitrogen.
Now, Nancy, as you know, sometimes scientists like you are considered to be tree huggers and out of touch with reality, but for the everyday person who's not immediately affected by this and says, well, you know, no big deal, how do you respond to them?
Well, especially in the Midwest, the idea that the nutrients that they're releasing that affect the Gulf also affect their health and landscapes, that's the biggest. The other issue is it's just like a carbon footprint. This is a nitrogen footprint, and anything that we do to reduce fossil fuel burning, too much gasoline use, especially ethanol, all kinds of things that our choice of food, if we eat, you know, more of a Mediterranean diet, there's less nitrogen needed to be applied to the crops. So there are a lot of things that we can do as individuals.
Well, you were recognized around the world for your efforts, and the MacArthur Fellowship, I'm sure, was a great honor.
Yes,
and not just anybody gets that.
No, that was a huge surprise. I'm at the end of my fifth year, so I got it in 2012, and it's allowed me to do things that I wouldn't have been able to do. Mostly travel to international areas to talk about similar areas in their countries and in their coastal waters. And I'm not really a tree hugger. I'm a fish hugger.
Well, as far as LSU's involvement in these matters, there's quite a presence, and you're a big part of it, but this is another, in some cases, an untold story that has relevance.
Yes, it does. And the unfortunate thing is that the funding that's needed in the agricultural community and the funding that's needed to monitor in the Gulf is fairly low, almost non-existent. So it's important to keep our state and federal legislators informed about this and the agencies as well.
And another listener asks about dead zones around the country and around the world. This isn't the only one, is it?
No, it's not. There's over 500 human-caused areas of low oxygen around the globe, at least that we know of right now. The largest is in the Baltic Sea. The Gulf of Mexico is the second largest. Our neighbors off of Mississippi and Alabama have low oxygen that's actually also caused by the Mississippi when it gets over in that direction. Chesapeake Bay, Long Island Sound, the German Bight of the North Sea, there's lots of places. And more in developing countries, more and more off South America now and China.
Ray in Prairieville. Ray, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thanks for taking the call, Jim. My question to Professor Abelay is, if she or anybody, other people at the LSU, have looked at the economic costs to us in the state, in other words, that 8,000, 9,000 square miles of dead zone, got to raise the price of shrimp, got to raise the price of fish, and obviously put a lot of fishermen out of work. But I'd like to hear her comment on that, if she has looked at that.
All right. Nancy?
I have not looked at that myself, but others have. And one of the issues is that large swath of low auction across the Gulf prevents juvenile shrimp from moving near shore to further offshore. And that does decrease the size when the low auction goes away, and it does decrease the value of that fishery. It's difficult to put an economic indicator on it because there are so many complicating factors, such as the cost of fuel, the amount of imports, which are many and frequent. So it's just difficult, but there is good evidence that there are some economic indicators that show it's not a good thing to have.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Nancy Rabelais.
Yeah, Doctor, have you noticed having a more difficult time lobbying our legislators since the Supreme Court Citizens United case?
I'm not sure if it's related to that case, but we are having more difficulty getting, at least at the federal level, the amount of funding that's necessary to keep these projects going. We have the legislature under the lead of Jerome Zerang passed a resolution this year that the state of Louisiana should support these studies, and there are similar resolutions going around that we hope might influence our at least our state and federal legislators.
Well, Nancy, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and let's do it again soon.